Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. George Washington Carver was a botanist who revolutionized agriculture in the South and came up with 300 uses for peanuts and many more for soybeans, pecans, and sweet potatoes. He was born into slavery in Diamond, Missouri, and his remarkable journey from slavery to scientific accomplishment is told in a new documentary, George Washington Carver, An Uncommon Life, which premieres tonight on Iowa Public Television at 8:30. And this hour, we're going to talk about the life and legacy of George Washington Carver. With me is filmmaker Laurel Bauer of IPTV. Hello, Laurel.
Hi, how are you, Charity?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
And I just wanted to make one quick correction. It's at 8 p.m.
8 p.m.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
And before I introduce our other guests, I just want to ask you, George Washington Carver's life has been told before in a number of different ways. What
right.
made you feel, and others at Iowa Public Television feel, that now was the time to tell this story again?
Well, it's been a project that's been in the works for quite some time, but we've always felt like his story is extremely important. And, you know, just about a year and a half, 2 years ago, we really thought we need to tell his story again. Because I think, as you mentioned in the opening, that even though we all feel like we know George Washington Carver, there's so much more about him that is to be told. And so that's I really think that's why we wanted to tell his story again, but tell it in somewhat of a new way, and a way that maybe some people are like, I never knew that about him, or really more like the true essence of George Washington Carver is what Paxton, who's joined me here, the associate producer, we really hope to tell.
Well, and when you first started working on this project, Laurel, what did you know about George Washington Carver?
You know, I really didn't know a lot. I remember learning about him in school during Black History Month, I think is a common thing many people say. And I knew about some of his work with peanuts and being a scientist. Honestly, until I traveled to Tuskegee a couple of times, I didn't know he was there as long as he was. I knew he had an Iowa connection. But I really learned a lot about him through this process, things that, you know, as we'll bring up later in the show, I'm sure that I just I'm really glad to know now. And like I said, traveling to Diamond, Missouri, where his national monument is, I didn't know a lot about his childhood. I just always kind of knew a little bit about his travels through Iowa and getting an education here.
I want to introduce my other guest this hour as well. Paxton Williams is associate producer of the film, as Laurel just mentioned, also former executive director of the Carver Birthplace Association. Hello, Paxton.
Hello. Good afternoon, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I also want to bring Dana Chandler into the conversation, university archivist at Tuskegee University in Alabama. Hello, Dana.
Hello. Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And I want to ask each of you the question that I just asked Laurel, which is, why is this an important story to tell right now? Paxton, why do you think it is?
I think in every generation, a story like Carver's needs to be told, simply because there's so much that resonates today. And it just shows you the type of reach that a person like Carver had. But it also shows you the environment that existed in his day, how he was able to address the issues, the concerns of his day. And I think they're all things that even today we could glean from his story. And so that's why I think in every generation we need to hear a story like this, but not because of what it was in itself, but because of what we can take from it, the lessons that we could then apply today.
And Dana, do you have anything you want to add?
Sure. I think that one of the things that's important for us all to consider is the modern scholarship. As more things are revealed about Carver, and we find out more things here in our own archives, we found new photographs that have never been seen before. We've found other documents and other relationships that we were unaware of through our research. It's really increased the scholarship and to the point where I think we're getting a better understanding of the man Carver rather than the myth Carver. And that's been a problem over the years that I've seen, is that there's been a lot of myth but very little truth And I'm hopeful that this documentary that comes out will expose more of the truth about Carver, because in this case, truth is more interesting than the fiction that surrounds him.
Well, and the truth of this story is incredible, and I can only imagine there are so many things that we can't know and will never know. Paxton, why don't you take us back to the very beginning for George Washington Carver? And anybody who has spent time looking into his story knows sort of the bare bones of what happened. But he was born very close to the end of the Civil War. His mother was a slave. Tell us about his very early childhood.
Yes, so he was born in southwest Missouri near Joplin. A town was called Diamond at the time, Diamond Grove, now called Diamond. And when George was just a toddler, he and his mother were abducted by outlaws who were traveling around the countryside, robbing people. You know, if they couldn't find any gold or silver or anything like that, they would take the slaves to resell them into slavery. And that's how... that's what happened to George and his mother when he was just a baby. George's father had been killed in a farm accident shortly before George's own birth. So George never knew him, and George never knew his mother, called Mary, either, because when they were abducted, George was found. A man by the name of Mr. Bentley was sent by Moses and Susan Carver, who'd owned Mary, to go and find him. But they never found Mary. They only found George. And so George was sickly as a child. He had an older brother named Jim who he grew up with. But he just learned a lot on the Carver homestead. He learned to use his imagination. He learned to believe in the specialty of nature. He learned to believe in his own dreams. And that's kind of just the—I don't know how much detail you want to go to. But now— where Carver was born is a 240-acre unit of national park system, so folks can visit there. There's a great 18,000-square-foot visitor center and just, you know, lots of museum exhibits.
And you can actually walk the paths that George walked as a child when he was learning about nature. But I do want to talk a little bit more about those years he spent with the Carvers. The line that we hear often is that, of course, he straddled that period of time between slavery and freedom. And without a mother, without a father, he and Jim were left with the Carver family. And the line that we hear is that they took them in and raised them as if they were their own children.
And I would say that's a true assessment. You know, Carver would write very warm words about his time with Moses and Susan. And he would visit occasionally after he went to Neosho and before he went to move to Kansas. And so he had very warm, familial connections to the Carvers.
As he was growing, you mentioned that he was a sickly child, which also meant that he spent a lot of time with Susan, with the women, not working out on the farm, doing the hard labor. But that gave him kind of an unusual opportunity to express his creativity early on, didn't it?
It did. And it gave him a skill set that he would use and apply his entire life in terms of working with clothing and, you know, doing laundry. You know, he opened a laundry when he went to school at Simpson. You know, he helped around in the kitchen. That was good. But when he worked at the Schultz Hotel in Winterset. And so many of the things that he did as a little boy held him in good stead later. And they also just influenced his ability to connect with nature and spend time in the woods and work with the mud and the dirt and the clay to make different dyes and stains. And so all things that he learned as a little boy, we see them later in his life serve him and the people around him well.
You mentioned leaving home in search of an education, and that's something he did at a very young age. Of course, we know that of course the end of slavery did not mean the end of discrimination and racism. I mean, schools were segregated, if there were schools for Black children at all. So what did he have to do to pursue an education?
Well, fortunately, he was able, he wasn't able to attend the schooling that was available nearby Diamond, But Aunt Susan Carver, got him a speller, and he was able to learn with her help how to learn from that. And there was a school, a colored school, in Neosho, Missouri, about 12 or so miles away, that Carver was able to attend. And he just decided on his own. He talked it over with the Carvers, with his brother Jim, and he decided he would walk to get an education. And you know, he left home, and because he wasn't going to walk 12 miles every day, and to be such a young age to decide, hey, I'm going to go and do this, you know, says a lot about who he was and what he believed was possible. And there was when he first really got involved with the African American community. He was taken in by some folks who happened to live right next door to the school, Mariah and Andy Watkins. Aunt Mariah, she was known as. And she was a midwife and watched other folks' kids. And Andrew, Uncle Andy, did odd jobs around town. And they saw George one day kind of sitting in a barn at night, you know, before school started. And they asked him what he was doing. And he told them how he traveled there to go to school and he didn't have a place to stay. And they decided, though they didn't know him, they weren't expecting him, they decided that he could live with them if he helped out around the house and worked hard in school. And he learned a lot there. He had a young teacher named Stephen Frost. And George was only there about a year or so when his own education just about matched that of Mr. Frost's. But he learned very valuable things. He gained a sense of community. He would also write back to folks in Neosho from his time there. And he had many friends. Cal Jefferson would live several years, who was a friend of his and who would help take care of Aunt Mariah. And so he wanted an education and he decided to go and get one.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we are talking about a new documentary that tells the story of George Washington Carver. It's called George Washington Carver, An Uncommon Life. It premieres tonight on Iowa Public Television at 8 p.m. with me, Laurel Bauer of IPTV, Paxton Williams, associate producer of the film, and Dana Chandler, university archivist at Tuskegee University in Alabama. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. A new documentary, George Washington Carver, An Uncommon Life, premieres tonight on Iowa Public Television at 8 p.m. With me this hour, filmmaker Laurel Bauer of Iowa Public Television, Paxton Williams, associate producer of the film and former executive director of the Carver Birthplace Association, and Dana Chandler, university archivist at Tuskegee University in Alabama. And we've been talking about how George Washington Carver, as a young child, born as a slave, but raised as part of the Carver family, he lost his mother very early on, sought an education himself. And Laurel, as you were researching this film, George Washington Carver told this story in abbreviated ways many times in his life. I mean, are there primary sources? Were there things that you could go to find more information about what he went through early in his life, considering that it was so long ago?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Paxton, when he was speaking earlier, that I think that was one of the things that really inspired me was when I visited Diamond, Missouri. I visited the National Monument and walked in the woods, and it's a beautiful place. And I could really see, I guess I could feel what Carver must have felt as a young boy. I mean, it's beautiful there. There's a connection you feel with nature. And I was really inspired. Curtis Gregory at the National Monument really was a terrific person to work with, has a love for Carver and for that area. And I think that story of him traveling by foot as a young boy, I know a lot of kids now, and I just can't even imagine. I mean, they're wonderful kids, but to have that determination and that desire to obtain an education in a very volatile time for Black people especially, but to be that young and to have that determination is just was remarkable to me. And so I learned a lot when I was in Diamond, Missouri, thanks to the great people there with the National Park Service. And then traveling to Tuskegee was very helpful. I visited twice. I went in June by myself to do some research. And then Paxton and I traveled back with our videographer, Rick Fuller. And I think when I first went to Tuskegee, and learn a lot more about him. And of course, this is later in his life. I remember having a conversation with Dana, and he said that he was a Renaissance man. And that really got me thinking about what that meant. And I think that's a very true statement. And I think Paxton and I, when we approached the film, always had that in the back of our minds as well.
Well, and before we move on to Tuskegee and the incredible time mm-hmm. that he spent there, there, of course, was the time in Iowa that came right. in between. So he went to high school in Missouri. He worked for a time as a homesteader, but then he really, really wanted to pursue a higher education. And of course, for a Black man at that day and age, that was so difficult. And it's not like he had money. So he came to Iowa. He came mm-hmm. to Simpson College. Laurel, why did he choose Simpson? What brought him here?
Well, he actually made his way first to Winterset. And I think that's the special thing about Iowa's story is that there were people who really took him in and became friends with him. And I think as you'll hear in the piece, he says in some of those places he felt for the first time in his life that he was a human being. And I think that is what is the important part of Iowa's story. So he made his way to Winterset and met some wonderful people there. And they inspired him and really encouraged him to make his way to Simpson. And then, of course, he went from there to Iowa State. But I think the most important thing is, even though there were some difficulties along the way, and maybe at first, especially maybe in Ames, I think Simpson was an exception. I think Paxton would agree that that was a college that he was not turned away because of the color of his skin, and the first place that allowed him to get an education. And then he made his way to Iowa State kind of based on he wanted to be an artist, but I think that some folks that knew him thought he might have a better future if he went more into agriculture, and that's kind of how he found his way to Iowa State. So but Iowa is a very important part of his story because of the people who encouraged him and treated him as a human being, as he said. And I think that's really, really important.
Well, and Paxton, you are an Iowa State University grad. And when you were at Iowa State University, you actually wrote a play about George Washington Carver. Tell me a little bit about how you learned about him when you first connected with his story.
So I like to joke that I miss George in Ames by 100 years because he left in the summer of 1896, and I was a freshman in the fall of 1996. And I like to joke that had he been 100 years later or me 100 years sooner, we would have been friends. But I took an honor seminar on Carver taught by the late, great Sandy McNabb, who was in plant pathology and forestry at Iowa State for about 50 years. And in that seminar, we took a trip to Diamond. And I'm from Mississippi originally, so I learned about Carver growing up. But it was when I got to Iowa State that I learned of his time here. I learned a lot more about his depth and breadth and all the various areas in which he succeeded and could have succeeded more had he dedicated more time to those areas. And so
back to that Renaissance man idea. He had so many abilities and talents.
And the great thing about that, Charity, is that he really tried to address problems in a holistic way. And so because he had all of these talents and interests, he was able to apply those talents and interests to his work. And so that's why when he would come up with the paints and the stains that people could use to beautify their homes, he knew that that would do something for their spirit to walk home to a nicely, freshly painted home. And so he had all of these interests, and he was able to tie those in to what he did. And his time in Ames, or in Winterset and in Indianola, important, I believe, is not only that he had these interests, but was that he shared those interests with others, and that they, and just to put a finer, you know, to echo what Laura was saying, the people in Winterset knew he wanted to go to school to pursue an education because he told them that he wanted to pursue an education. You know, he shared with them his great heartbreak after he was accepted to attend school in Highland, Kansas, and after he got there, he was turned away after they saw that he was not white, you know, and they saw he was black, and that was something that I'm sure hurt him, but he was able to share that hurt. So he was able to open up to folks. They were able to open up to him, and I think that's the whole story about all of the connections with the Wallaces, for example. Uncle Henry, who started Wallace's Farmer, Henry Cantwell Wallace, his son, who served as Secretary of Agriculture, who was Carver's professor, and then Henry Agard Wallace, who would be one of the folks to found Pioneer, and who would, you know, be Vice President and Ag Secretary himself. You know, in that whole family, you see just the spectrum of Carver's relationships, because in one instance, he's able to learn from Uncle Henry and Henry C., but then he gets to become the mentor going out on nature walks with young Henry A. And so I think just in that relationship, you can kind of see the whole spectrum of how people were able to invite Carver in and how he was able to benefit them and help them grow as well.
Well, and I think it's important to say Iowa State University is very proud that George Washington Carver was the first African-American student at the university and very proud of his legacy and has shown that in many ways. But I think maybe the pride overshadows a little bit of how it was not made easy for him as the first African-American student at the university. I think it's important to talk about the fact that he was not allowed to live in the dormitories and he was not allowed to eat in the dining halls. Laurel, do you have some thoughts about that?
Well, and that's and something that Paxton was very helpful about. And I think something that he says in the documentary that I think really hits it well is that at first when he came there, because of the color of his skin, some people were not very good to him. And like you mentioned, he wasn't eating in the same place as the white students and the white faculty. But I think because of someone that he knew from Indianola, a woman, and you'll hear that in the documentary, came and walked around campus with him and made people aware of the fact that this is a person. He is just like you and me. And I think that I liked what Paxton said, though, in the piece that when, you know, maybe so they weren't accepting him at first, but they learned and they got to know him and they changed and they thought about maybe some of the mistakes that they were making and realized that this is a person of worth and a person, it doesn't matter what the color of his skin is, that we should accept him. And I think Ames and Iowa State is a great example of that, that maybe in the beginning it wasn't great, but he learned to stay, and I give him credit for that, but they also learned to accept him and really make him in the end feel welcome and didn't want to see him go.
We're talking about the new documentary, George Washington Carver, An Uncommon Life, premieres tonight on Iowa Public Television at 8 p.m. And I want to play just a little segment from the film. This is Gary Kramer, who's executive director of the State Historical Society of Missouri, talking a little bit about some of Carver's thoughts about being a black man in the day and age in which he lived.
The paradox is that this young African-American kid grew up in a household dominated by two rather elderly white people. And for a time, he had his brother Jim with him. But beyond his brother Jim, there's no evidence that Carver had much contact with other African Americans. And to me, that's a very important reality of his life. So he's born in a state that is in great conflict. The conflict ends, but the animosities don't. And he's born into a state that is segregated when it came to education. African Americans and whites went to separate schools. And that would have, I think, a tremendous effect on Carver. There are multiple instances in Carver's life in which he refers to himself variously as the orphan child of a despised race. And that's always been a very telling phrase for me. I think in that regard, Carver had a lot of tremendous insecurities. Why wouldn't he?
Again, that was just a moment from the new documentary, George Washington Carver, An Uncommon Life. And with me, Laurel Bauer of IPTV, Paxton Williams, associate producer of the film, Dana Chandler, university archivist at Tuskegee University in Alabama. And Dana, I'd love to get your thoughts on what we hear in that clip, because of course, George Washington Carver did make the decision to go work at Tuskegee University, a black university, to go into the South to help his people. But I'm curious, in all of the papers and thoughts that you've been able to research about George Washington Carver, he was definitely a man shaped by his times, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. George Washington Carver, the material that we have here in the archive is fairly voluminous and pretty telling about Carver and his life, his feelings, his methodology. Carver was a very spiritual man. One of the things that most people don't realize is that he did not separate the physical from the spiritual. He felt like God's hand was in everything, and I think that's pretty important, too. When talking about George Washington Carver, is to explore both sides of the man. You mentioned a term, you said his people. George Washington Carver's definition of who his people were and at that time changed. He did come to Tuskegee in 1896 at the behest of Booker T. Washington to be the administrator of the farm, but that didn't work out to Booker T. Washington's dismay. And it's kind of a funny thing here on campus to over the years, try to find photographs of Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver standing next to each other, and you won't. There was a bit of animosity between them. I guess I can say this, that Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver both admired each other. But I think Booker T. Washington found him to be very frustrating in the fact that Carver wanted to do research and not necessarily do the work that he had originally thought he was going to have him do here at Tuskegee.
Well, let's kind of do a rundown of the work that he wanted him to do at Tuskegee. I mean, he sent him this famous letter asking him to come and work hard at Tuskegee University, and George answered the call, but he wanted him to be the administrator of the farm and do an outreach program for farmers in the area and teach and be the veterinarian. This was an incredibly overwhelming task, wasn't it?
It really was, but that's Booker T. Washington, and still pretty much the case here at Tuskegee anyway. You wear many hats, as I do here. The interesting thing about Carver is that he took all that in stride, and Carver's work still makes an impact on the world today. As I said, he saw his people originally as the poor African-Americans here in Alabama, in this area, but his definition changed toward the end of his life so that his people were the poor. And his interaction with whites and blacks here in Alabama and other places is well known because of his outreach. And it's his outreach that continues to be an important aspect today. Our website has had over 955,000 hits. 45% of those are from abroad. Of those 45%, 77% are directed at one thing only, George Washington Carver's bulletins. All those people that are in the world that are living, you know, marginally with no fertilizer, access to fertilizers or pesticides, are actually using his bulletins today to make their lives better. And I think he'd be very happy with that. That was his thrust. And because of the work of George Washington Carver, extension work here at Tuskegee grew substantially to the point where we had the very first extension agent for the United States of America, the federal extension agent, Tom Campbell, who was taught and chosen by Carver and Washington. Carver developed the notion of carrying people materials out to their farms to teach them how to be better sufficient as farmers or as homemakers. And he was an amazing man. And yes, he was a Renaissance man. In every sense of the word, not only was Carver a scientist, not only did he sew, he knitted, he sang in the choir, he taught piano, he taught a Bible class. And he was an amazing man, and everybody well respected him in the community.
Well, we'll talk more in just a moment. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back. Dana Chandler is with me, university archivist at Tuskegee University in Alabama. Paxton Williams, associate producer of the new documentary, George Washington Carver, An Uncommon Life. And Laurel Bauer, the filmmaker behind this documentary. She works at Iowa Public Television. And the documentary premieres tonight on IPTV at 8 p.m. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. A new documentary, George Washington Carver, An Uncommon Life, premieres tonight on Iowa Public Television at 8 p.m. We're talking about the film and the life and legacy of George Washington Carver this hour. With me, filmmaker Laurel Bauer of Iowa Public Television, Paxton Williams, associate producer of the film, Dana Chandler, university archivist at Tuskegee University in Alabama. I want to play another clip from the film, and this is Dr. Walter Hill. He's dean of the College of Agriculture at Tuskegee, and he is reflecting on why George Washington Carver made the decision to come to Tuskegee University.
Why in the heck did he come to Tuskegee? Where he came, where people were jealous of him, clearly the resources he obtained were less, came to a hostile environment, both politically, socially. Despite all that, why did he come? You know, and you look and read the history, and it comes down to serve my people. That is the most fundamental piece that I want to share from my vantage point of 40 years in here, because taking on that task, that's the most daunting task. Just a few years out from slavery ending, a decade or so out from slavery ending, right into the heart of the beast. Now, the only way you could do this, if you have to be a warrior, you have to have courage, you have to be dauntless. You have to be so mission-oriented. He had to suffer the indignities that a black person had to suffer during that time, and yet he continued on his journey. That's the real power. That's the real spirit within.
A moment from the new documentary, George Washington Carver, An Uncommon Life. And Dana, we were just touching on that just a moment ago, but I think it's spelled out really well in the film, Laurel, that George Washington Carver was becoming extremely successful at Iowa State University. He was not only the first black student at Iowa State University, he was the first black member of the faculty at Iowa State University, and he was well respected and could have stayed there. So the decision to go to Tuskegee University, I think that reveals so much about who George Washington Carver was. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Laurel?
I agree. I think that he could have had a very distinguished career at Iowa State. I think they really wanted him to stay there as part of the faculty. And I guess maybe it would have been a more comfortable decision. And I think that you're right with your comment, Charity, that it really shows who he was as a person, that he was willing to leave the comforts of something that he had become. They recognized his genius and who he was, but he, in his heart, and I think even as a young boy, I think he always had, there was more than that. There was more than comfort and more than money, and that Tuskegee was where he needed to be, and he saw that he had a more of a purpose there. And so I think it does say a lot about who he is as a person.
And Dana, since you are at Tuskegee and you have not just access to his work and his papers, but reflections of so many people who worked with him and knew him at Tuskegee, tell us a little bit about what we can know about what George Washington Carver was like as an instructor and a mentor and an employee.
Well, we do. From everything from Carver's letters that he wrote out to his boys who were young men throughout the nation who contacted him regarding things that were going on in their lives, agricultural work. The impact that he made with them, it continues on today. Hopefully there will be a couple books coming out soon that deal with Carver and his influence on these young men. And that itself is very intriguing to me. But also, Carver's outreach to the public went beyond just Alabama and Macon County and Tuskegee. It went completely throughout the South. He traveled all the time, even when he didn't feel like it, he was traveling to visit people, to help people do with their farming, with their lives in general. Carver's work is transcendent, beyond what he might have accomplished at Iowa State, which his close relationship with people like Dr. Pamel and the Buds is certainly important to him and remains important to him. And that's one of the things that I like to emphasize, is that relationship continued on throughout his entire career. And Carver seemed to transcend what we would think of as a man of the institution to a man of the people. And that outreach that he had was so great, accomplishing things from the work with peanuts, and where he spoke in front of the Congress regarding peanuts and how important they were. So, from the standpoint of what I see in the writings about him by others, is that he was a man that was always willing to give of his time and of his money. And we have one person who works for us who remembers Carver when she was a little girl and how he would experiment, she said, on them by offering them up cookies that he would bake. And sometimes she said they would be so bad, but you would take them anyway and smile and say how good they were because of who he was. And then they talk about, and other things, they talk about him traveling around the community collecting bottles and string and aluminum foil and things like that, how important it was for him to be able to use the materials that he had on hand. And I like to think that he was the first African-American green scientist. And that certainly shows in his work, too, and continues to show in this area.
Well, and not even just the first African-American green scientist. I mean, he was promoting crop rotation and some very important principles of sustainable agriculture at a time in which really nobody else was doing that. And he was one of the first green scientists, period, wouldn't you say, Dana?
Yeah, there are a couple before that are actually doing some outreach. But Carver's work here in the South, as I said, it's still viable today. And you can see it in how these people are still going to his bulletins that specifically talk about crop rotation. That is the big deal for Carver. And it is part of his legacy. And as an inventor, there are things that we have records of here in our archives, that inventions that were never fulfilled, but were brilliant on their own.
I want to play another short clip from the film, and this is a woman named Melanie Robinson. She was a student nurse to George Washington Carver at Tuskegee University, and she's just remembering what kind of a man he was.
Just a simple individual, wasn't hard to talk to, just as kind and nice. You would think, he would, being a genius, you would think he would kind of be a little standoff, a little selfish, not kind and not polite. He'd just act like a real human being.
Again, that was Melanie Robinson, who helped to serve George Washington Carver when she was at Tuskegee University, when he was at Tuskegee University. Laurel and Paxton, I mean, it must have been such a joy to have the opportunity to actually talk with people, interview people who knew George Washington Carver. Laurel, why don't you share some of your experiences first, and then Paxton can share his thoughts.
Well, and that's how Paxton was so helpful, because he's gone to Tuskegee many times portraying George Washington Carver, and you know, it's kind of hard to find people now. I mean, it's Melanie's, I think, is 97. And so, and she's sharp as can be and had some funny stories. And so we felt really fortunate to run in, to be able to find a few folks that still have the memories firsthand. And then some of the others in the piece, their parents knew them, knew him, and they remember vividly the stories that they would tell about getting to know George Washington Carver. And so that was really, those were terrific interviews. And Paxton maybe will share a little bit more about that because he knows them more personally. But we felt really fortunate just to hear those stories. And I think it kind of alludes to what we've all talked about, how he affected their lives and how they affected him as well. But it continued from generation to generation, and it continues around the world today, whether they knew him personally, but from what he, how he got to know people and from his work back then, it just, it's still a legacy that is, that we have today. And I think that's part of the reasons why we wanted to tell his story. But Paxton kind of knows the people in Tuskegee a little bit better than me, and I'm sure Dana does as well.
Paxton, what are your thoughts?
So with folks like Miss Melanese and Miss Amelia Boynton Robinson, who passed away probably 2 or so years ago, who had her own very distinguished career. She was a secretary to Dr. King at one point. And she told me once, she said, Carver used what the people had, and the people had nothing. And each of these individuals who knew him, they get such joy when they talk about him. They enjoy being able to remember him and to share their experiences with him. And so that was one thing I was so pleased to be involved in this, you know, was to help see those folks again, to just spend more time with them. Because they all have, they talk about how Carver affected individuals and how he affected families. And I think that's something, I think that's one reason why he went to Tuskegee. Here in Iowa, at Simpson and in various places, he learned how he could reach out to people, how he could learn and grow, and how he could just communicate. And so I believe he knew his capabilities, and he knew that these were big problems that needed to be addressed. And he knew that communication was something that he could do. He knew that he could, you know, perhaps from growing up with the Carvers, you know, he didn't have any fear of white people because he grew up with white people. And he did. He loved black people. He was a black person. And so he saw himself as a bridge, and he was in many ways a bridge. And so beyond his scientific endeavors, beyond his work as a researcher, as an educator, just his simple being, just being in the community, did much, and still, you know, as Laura points out, how the impact you'll see Mrs. Holland, Steva Holland, in the documentary, talking about stories that her mother, Miss Naomi Adams, who passed away about 4 years ago, that she shared with the family, and how the little things that Carver did and how he inspired her and what he shared with her many years ago, how that's still resonating through the family, through their family. And you'll see Reverend William Carver Leonard, one of Carver's godsons, who's talking about the impact Carver had both with his parents, but then also on his kids who didn't know Carver.
We have just a few minutes left. I want to ask you, Laurel, in making the decisions that you made to include the things that you did in the film, there are a couple things that are missing that are part of George Washington Carver's history. One was a brutal attack that he suffered as a young man when he was seeking that education in Missouri. And you talk in the film about the hardships he overcame, but not specifically about an attack that really could have ended his life. Why did you decide not to include that?
Well, I think it's, I'm not sure which attack you're alluding to, I guess. But I did choose to talk about the lynching that he witnessed in Kansas, and I think that affected him greatly. I mean, he moved away from that area immediately, and I think in an hour-long documentary, it's hard to include everything. Paxton and I gave a speech at Iowa State last week, and there are so many things, especially with a man like Carver, where if I had more time, I would love to tell more of those stories. And I think you have to kind of pick and choose what you think maybe helps tell the story that you hope people know about him. And so I alluded to the lynching in Kansas that he experienced. But there were other circumstances when he was in Tuskegee. And as Dana mentioned, he traveled all over, that he would be in some scary situations, or he would be invited to speak somewhere but still be not allowed to stay in the hotel or to not eat with the white people. And so I think that's something that we can all learn from Carver, is that he experienced that throughout his life. Even when he became this famous scientist or famous person, he still went through racism, and but he defied the odds and continued to help what he thought was his goal in life, or what his mission was to help people. But I think there were many circumstances that we didn't even have an opportunity to mention that he experienced hate and experienced fear, I'm sure, where he didn't feel safe.
As with anybody who rose to great fame, although that's not something he ever sought, but people will question a person's legacy over time. And Dana, you share some thoughts in the film about the legacy of George Washington Carver, not as a scientist. I mean, that's something that people have questioned, like, oh, was his science any good? Maybe he was just the peanut guy. But how should we remember this remarkable man?
You should remember him as a fellow of the Institute in England. He got that award way before he became really famous. They recognized him as a scientist, recognized that not all the time when you are doing research or looking into some things is everything available for you to see. We have 7 notebooks of Carver's that have just come to light within the last few years that provide interesting insight into Carver as a scientist. And what is a scientist? You know, he followed the scientific method. His work still continues today. Interest in his work still continues today. And I think that his legacy, the fact that you have so many people around the world that are still accessing that material and using it to make their lives better, that is his legacy.
A remarkable scientist, man, humanitarian. Thank you all so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dana Chandler, University Archivist at Tuskegee University in Alabama, Paxton Williams and Laurel Bauer, the people behind the new documentary, George Washington Carver, An Uncommon Life, which premieres tonight on Iowa Public Television at 8 p.m. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.